Welcome back to Menace Podman, your NBA and fantasy basketball podcast. This is season 2, episode 43, week 25 of the NBA season, the final week of the regular season. I'm Steve St. Pierre, and we have a bunch to get to, so let's dive right in.
Name on your paper, first thing.
We're going to go ahead and start off first by talking about Steve Alexander, a.k.a. Dr. A. We're sending thoughts and prayers to Doc and his family. Unfortunately, he announced that he has thyroid cancer. For anybody who doesn't know him, Steve Alexander covers fantasy basketball. He covered fantasy hoops for over two decades with NBC / Roto World. He now works with ESPN and RotoWire, where he has an awesome weekly podcast with fellow awesome fantasy basketball analyst Rick Kamla. And he actually just beat one of our other favorites in the industry, Dan Bespris of Sports Ethos, to win his 30-team fantasy league. So huge shout out to Dr. A, but also, like we said, you know, just major thoughts and prayers to Doc and his family. I personally have watched and read all of Dr. A's stuff, not all, but a good amount of his work over the years. And he's definitely somebody who kind of inspired me to get into this space and cover hoops ourselves. So yeah, just definitely praying for him and hoping he makes a full recovery and has a good summer and enjoys his time with his family. So thoughts and prayers out to him. Next, we're going to go ahead and get into some Hall of Fame talk here. Our guide, Chauncey Billups, former Pistons legend and NBA legend, Vince Carter. They were both elected into the Hall of Fame. They're going to be enshrined later this summer, and that's awesome. Well-deserved for both of those guys. Huge props to them. I love Chauncey Billups. I always smile when I think of his time with the Pistons.
I would touch you right now if I could through the mic.
Just an awesome memory. And yeah, one of my favorites of all time. So definitely stoked to see his speech. Can't wait to see that. Can't wait to see all that this summer. It's going to be a lot of fun. Next off, I wanted to mention Bronny James. Of course, he's LeBron James Jr. He declared for the NBA draft and also entered the NCAA transfer portal. So just kind of keeping all of his options open. He's going to work out for a lot of different people, a lot of different NBA teams, and just kind of keep an open mind about where he wants to play next season, next year. I think it's a good move, good business decision. And yeah, we'll see how it plays out. We'll keep you posted on all that. And then Scott bookmarked the announcement of the NBA salary cap projections. So I just wanted to mention that real quick here. They had come out with some projections earlier this year, back in January, and apparently those numbers have been unchanged. So it looks like the salary cap is going to be $141 million. The minimum team salary will be $127 million. The tax level will be $172 million. First apron is 179, second apron is 190. So basically, we talked about the aprons last summer. For teams that go over the tax, they can receive different kind of penalties for that. And the second apron's the bigger one, where you lose a lot of like picks and money and all kinds of different like assets and ways of being able to sign free agents for anything above the minimum, basically. So, and I'm sure we'll get more into that, you know, later in the summer. We'll probably have more time and just, you know, with kind of coinciding with free agency, we'll have a better opportunity to break all that down and get more into the nitty gritty of it. But just wanted to mention it. And it's something that we'll prepare for, you know, after the playoffs, when we get into free agency and all that. So should be fun to discuss. Let's go ahead and transition right into news and notes. And like I said last week, we want to basically just kind of focus from here on out with the teams that are in the playoffs, that are in the play-in. We're not really worried too much at this point about injuries and stuff for non-playoff teams because they're getting ready to have their off season. So
better luck next year.
If anybody's day to day or whatever, they're just going to rest up, recover, presumably. Obviously, if we get any news on those teams during the off season, we'll pass that along. And in fact, we do have some news and notes that we'll cover here even today. But let's go ahead and start with some injury news. And the first ones I want to talk about are Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder. SGA is dealing right now with a right quad contusion. He's missed four consecutive games. And then J-Dub, Jalen Williams, he has a sprained left ankle right now. He's missed the last four games as well. I kind of get the sense that these are both day-to-day slash, you know, just precautionary. Let's take our time and not overdo it with these guys right before, you know, the start of the playoffs. So hopefully it's not any worse than that for either of them. But if it is, you know, we'll certainly let you know. But I'm thinking slash hoping that it's just, you know, just day to day. And speaking of which, I feel the same way about Kawhi Leonard. He's dealing right now with right knee inflammation. He's missed the last four games. I kind of get the vibe, same thing with him. You know, just precautionary. Let's take our time. Let's not overdo it. Let's be safe. And let's get healthy and ready to go here for hopefully a nice long playoff push. I got some good news on Karl Anthony Towns from the Timberwolves. He had left knee surgery earlier this year. He's returned to practice. Sounds like he should be back real soon. So that's awesome news. We'll have to see if he can get some time on the court, get ramped up. We'll see how he looks. He's a guy that we'll definitely be talking about when we get into our NBA playoffs fantasy league that we're going to be doing. We're going to be hyping that up a ton. We'll probably start talking about that a little bit more as soon as next week. So stay tuned to that. We mentioned Jamal Murray. Was dealing with right knee inflammation. He returned April 6th. He's looked pretty good. I think he's going to be all right. You know, again, with older players, you got to be careful, you know, hopefully don't overexert themselves, but yeah, I think he's going to be fine. Hopefully, knock on wood, it'll be good to go the rest of the way here, and hopefully Denver will give us a good showing here in the postseason. We've also got good news on OG Anunoby from the Knicks. He was out for a while with an injured right elbow. We talked about how he came back, but then had to sit again. Well, he returned April 5th, and he's looked good. Hopefully he's going to be, you know, fine moving forward here. We've talked about how the Knicks have a ton of depth right now on the wings, so that really helps. They don't have to feel obligated to play him 35, 40 minutes. They can kind of ease him back into that. And with all of their depth, he may not play that many minutes at all during any games, even in the playoffs. You know, we'll have to wait and see. That being said, we've got bad news on his teammate, Julius Randle. He's been out with, after having, well, he's been having issues with his right shoulder, but he's decided to opt for surgery on his right shoulder. So he's going to be out the rest of the season.
One in, one out.
That sucks for him. Sucks for the Knicks. It is what it is. You know, they're going to move forward, like I said, with all of their wing depth. They'll just go a little bit smaller. We talked last week about how Mitchell Robinson came back, but they're going to be kind of easing him back into the lineup. They've got a lot of centers, and they've got a lot of shooting guards and small forwards. So they're just going to kind of go by committee, and they're still going to be competitive. They'll still be fun to watch, and hopefully they'll have a good run here in the playoffs. They've been playing well, you know, so hopefully they can keep the momentum going. Speaking of which, the Miami Heat got good news. Tyler Hero, he came back. He was out for a while with right foot tendonitis, but he returned April 5th, and he's looked great. He looks like he hasn't missed a beat. So hopefully, again, you know, knock on wood, he's good to go here. He'll be good to go for the playoffs. He'll definitely be somebody to be worth drafting in our playoff league. So we'll be talking about him. And then the last bit of injury news I have here is a guy we've been mentioning for the past several weeks now, Onyeka Okongwu of the Hawks. He's been dealing with a sprained left big toe. He remains out indefinitely. I'm hoping that he can make his way back here for the playoffs or the play-in, anything, you know, as soon as possible. But, you know, we're going to have to just wait and see. But there hasn't been an official formal update on him, so we're just calling him out indefinitely. And if anything changes, we'll let you know. Let's get into some transaction news here. We're going to start off by talking about the Charlotte Hornets and their head coach, Steve Clifford. He's announced that he's stepping down as head coach, and he's going to transition into a front office role. You know, they've got all new ownership. They've got a brand new front office. So, you know, they're basically cleaning house. They're going to definitely put their own group of guys in, and I'm sure the roster is going to change a little bit here. They've had a real bad season. We've talked all about them. You know, it starts and stops with LaMelo Ball and the fact that he's been in, you know, been out of the lineup, you know, pretty much all season again. And, you know, we've seen pretty successful runs from individual players. You know, we talked about how Miles Bridges came back this year and he's looked great.
That's the one.
We've talked about their rookie, Brandon Miller. He's been really good, especially here in the second half of the season. His role's increased and he's looked solid. They made some good pickups and got some good guards, but, you know, we're going to have to see what they do with their roster. You know, they've got a lot of talented centers, Mark Williams, Nick Richards. We're going to have to see what they do with these guys. Williams was a disappointment this year. He looked like he was bound to have a really good fantasy season, but then he went down with an injury early and never came back. So sucks for him and it sucks for them. We'll have to just see how it plays out this summer. They'll definitely be a team we'll be watching. As far as transactions go, we've got Jared Butler. The Washington Wizards converted him to a standard 3-year contract. He was on a 2-way deal. And in order to make room for him on the roster, they waived former Piston Isaiah Livers. Speaking of former Pistons, Luka Garza, Garzilla of the Minnesota Timberwolves, they converted him to a standard contract. So good to see that. I've always liked Garza. I've always thought that he's a talented player, just needs the right opportunity. I liked him on the Pistons. I thought, you know, when the Pistons were tanking and shutting people down, they gave him some run late in the season a couple of years back, and he looked good. He was fun to watch. He's one of those guys, we talked about him before, you know, he was really good in college. Not so sure he's going to ever really amount to much in the NBA, but we'll have to see. But he's looked good in spurts, and, you know, he's an easy guy to root for. Nice guy, cool story, just, you know, seems like a good dude.
You want my towel?
The Chicago Bulls signed Javonte Green for the rest of the season. The 76ers signed Jeff Downton Jr. for the rest of the year. And then we got a couple 10-day contracts here. Malik Williams, he signed a 10-day deal with the Toronto Raptors. Forgot to mention that the Bulls waived Terry Taylor. And then Timmy Allen signed a 10-day contract with the Grizzlies. Shout out to our boy Tim Allen from Detroit, Home Improvement fame. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go check it out. It's a fantastic sitcom from the 90s.
That's all I got, my brother.
And on that note, I think we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back here, we're going to talk a little post-March Madness and kind of recap how things went. There was a lot of excitement. We're going to talk men's and women's. So stay tuned.
Hey, it's Scott from Menace Podman, and if you love sports and you're a somewhat low-key gambling degenerate like I am, you should definitely check out Outlier.bet. They have a super easy-to-use platform supported on both mobile and desktop sites, and it really allows you to crunch the numbers and make you get some confidence in the bets that you're making. You can do multiple things on Outlier. You can explore across multiple markets. You can get suggestions on and curated picks. You can analyze trends, matchup data, line movement. And my favorite feature, Outlier is integrated with multiple betting sites, so you can seamlessly transfer your picks to automatically fill out your bet slips with just as easy as two clicks. So there's a link directly in the show notes to Outlier. You should check them out. Click on the link, go to the site, sign up, get a free 7-day trial of Outlier, and go win some money.
All right, welcome back. We're going to talk a little March Madness recap. With me to do so is our good friend Mike Bark. What's up, City?
How you guys doing? I'm good today.
We're doing good, man. We're doing good. Beautiful weather here in Michigan. Getting ready for summer. Got our off-season stuff going on. We're having a good time. How's everything going with you?
I'm doing good. A little sad March Madness is over, but other than that, I'm doing good. Excited for the weather to change.
Yeah, good times, good times. And we're going to talk all about March Madness here, obviously. We brought in the expert, and we got a lot to discuss. We were talking just now before we hit record. A lot on the docket today, so we're going to go ahead and kick things off here. And since you and I are such classy gentlemen, let's go ahead and let's do ladies first. Well, first things first, I want to give a shout out to both UConn and NC State for their men's and women's teams, both making it to the Final Four. And then obviously congratulations are in order to both UConn and South Carolina for winning the men's and women's tournaments, respectively. Both were fantastic tournaments. We're going to break them down a little bit. But first, yeah, I just wanted to talk about the ladies. And obviously, huge shout out to South Carolina and their coach, Dawn Staley. They had a perfect season. Looked great. They took down Caitlin Clark and her Iowa team. And, huge shout out to them. I don't know if you had anything specific to add.
Nothing too specific. There's definitely a lot of buzz around the Final Four with the ladies' side this year for the obvious reasons.
Yeah, and I mentioned this briefly last week, but I wanted to dive in a little bit to the Iowa-LSU game. That was the game that saw the matchup of Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. And I've got some numbers here, man. It was the most viewed, in fact, here, let me just pull it up real quick. It had 12.3 million viewers. It was more viewers than any women's college basketball game ever. It was more viewers than all of these things here. I'm just going to list them all. The 2023 NBA Finals, the 2023 World Series, 2023 Orange Bowl, 2023 Big Ten Championship, 2023 Cotton Bowl, 2023 Pac-12 Championship, 2023 Big 12 Championship, 2023 ACC Championship, 2023 Peach Bowl, anything from Thursday Night Football, every 2023 college football regular season game other than Ohio State versus our Michigan Wolverines.
That's the one.
So, just incredible. Completely well-deserved. I talked about how I missed the freaking game. I forgot that it was on. I'm still kicking myself. I need to go back and find some kind of way to, you know, catch a replay of it or something, because it was a really good battle. I talked a little bit about it last week, but did you happen to catch it?
I caught it in portions, small portions. Yeah. Personally, I think America loves a feud, so I think that's the reason for the. I mean, the only game that beat that was the Ohio State and Michigan game this year, which obviously had nasty undertones to it too. So I think America likes a feud, and there were people like Pat McAfee nationally hyping it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that.
Oh yeah,
that's what people tuned into the most.
Yeah, for sure. It was really good. It was really good for women's basketball, for all of college basketball. And, you know, it's a perfect segue here. Scott and I are going to be covering the WNBA. We're doing fantasy WNBA. We're excited about that. And the draft for the WNBA is actually coming up next week. So we're going to be talking all about that. And those two players are both going to be drafted early. Caitlin Clark's going to go number one to Indiana. And Reese is surely going to be a top 10 pick, if not higher than that. And it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to see and follow their careers as they go on here professionally. So, yeah, just really cool. Huge shout out to them. And like you said, just, you know, providing America and the world with an entertaining feud and matchup and battle.
Anybody who can shoot it from the logos is going to draw attention as well. That's
man,
what
shit. Man.
You can't, you got to respect that.
Exactly. One other thing I wanted to mention here, just real briefly, is Nick Wright on Fox Sports. Just want to give him a shout out. Scott had bookmarked some comments that he made regarding athletes, young athletes, and being on social media. He thinks that they should be logging off and just not worrying about checking for comments and likes and stuff like that. And Scott couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. It's just, you know, it's just a huge distraction, and it's just bad for your mental health and for these kids, these student athletes who have so much else in their lives going on. The last thing that they need is all this extra, you know, noise coming from the outside world. And, you know, I know it's tough, you know, everything's on there, and, you know, especially when you're young, you got a lot on your mind, and, you know, it's just the way that we all kind of communicate and, you know, stay up to date on stuff. But the comments and the personal stuff, you know, whether it's good or bad, I just think, you know, if you're a student athlete, focus on yourself and the way that you, you know, look at yourself in the mirror. And then obviously, like, those closest to you, you know, listen to them first and foremost, your parents, coaches, teachers, friends, and, you know, just kind of go from there.
I agree mostly with you. You know, you'll hear stories of athletes checking their social media during halftime of games, which obviously is a huge distraction. You know, one aspect that we're overlooking slightly with those comments is the money that can be made on Instagram. However that works, I'm not into social media. But
no, that's a good point. That's a really good point, especially this day and age, you know, with all the means that the players have to making a profit. And, you know, that's a great point. But, you know, don't they have agents and stuff now too? So, like, I don't know. I just kind of feel like that's another thing that, like, they could be doing. But in any case, you know, I think we all agree, and just in terms of, like, the, you know, reading up on comments and just people saying this and that about your game or about your performance or lack thereof, whatever, you know, just take it all with a grain of salt, you know, and really just, if you can, try to stay away from it as much as possible.
I couldn't agree more other than the money part. I mean, if you're a troll, what better satisfaction than getting a response from one of these people? Why put yourself in that position?
Yeah. Yeah. And no, that is a great point about, you know, just the business side of it. And, you know, just you definitely got to keep your options open and, you know, definitely don't shut anything down in that regard. But let's go ahead and switch gears here. I wanted to talk to you all about, before we get into any, like, breakdown of the tournament and stuff, let's go over some of the coaching changes here. And obviously we can start off, let's talk about Michigan. Let's talk about Dusty May. And I'm just going to turn it over to you, man. What are your thoughts on Dusty and the hiring and how everything went down?
Well, you had me on a couple of weeks ago, and I briefly went over, you know, some of the candidates out there. Yeah. And at the time, I wasn't too high on Dusty May. It's not that I was against him, but I think I came in with the angle that, you know, only two of his last 6 years have been, you know, Final Four worthy. Even though they didn't make it this year, they still started out number five. But upon reading more and more, I didn't realize that the program had been so low before he took it. Obviously, we all know that's not a basketball school where he's coming from. But he definitely improved them each year and had a knack for finding talent. I read at one point before Kentucky found him, they found Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Forgive me if I mispronounced that. But
Shai,
that
was SGA.
Yeah. So Dusty has an eye for talent there. I'm excited about it. You know, John Beilein had a say in who they were going to hire. So I think that definitely gives me some confidence. I think it's going to really come down to how much support he gets from the NIL over at Michigan and the admissions. I'm optimistic they can have a quick turnaround. I think I've heard up to four of his starters may be going into portal, including a couple already. So they should be able to revamp that roster hopefully quick. I mean, things fell off the wagon with Juwan Howard, but I do believe as bad as a job as he did, I do believe he was a victim of circumstances to some extent. You know, the university doesn't support them in nil the way they would have liked. And he could have had this year Terrence Shannon, Caleb Love, and Hunter Dickinson on a team if it wasn't for the admissions.
would have helped a little bit.
But they had none of them. And you saw what they put out this year, which belongs to him. And retrospect, you know, I think a couple of years ago he had the number one recruiting class with Musa Diabate, Houston, a couple of the others. Either they transferred or went pro early and are doing nothing. I don't think he ever intended it to become a one-and-done factory. That's what it became, and we saw what happened. I think that he actually did produce some players, but his roster management wasn't the best. So I think that's going to be a key for Dusty May is being able to work within the framework of what he's able to do, and hopefully the university loosens things up a little bit to allow him to, you know, provide a quick turnaround on the roster.
Yeah, I agree. And I mentioned too at the time of the hire that I like the fact that he's a younger-ish kind of guy. You know, he's not somebody that's just going to come in and then in a few years retire or whatever. Like, this looks like very much a long-term, you know, build the program, like reestablish the program type of move. And so I'm excited and very optimistic. And yeah, I agree. I heard all the same things. And yeah, I watched the press conference too. I liked everything he had to say. I liked his demeanor and just his enthusiasm. You know, he passed up a lot of other opportunities to come here, and that says something. So that's a really good sign. And I'm excited for, you know, the future ahead here.
Hopefully him passing up Louisville is a sign that him and the university have some understandings about how things need to be done. I know that the university came out and announced there's going to be a basketball collective, much like there is with football. So that's positive news. Another thing I like about, you know, his, you know, coming here is he's promised a fun style of play, and I can't, in the words, how disgusting they were at times to watch the last 2 years, for sure, even 3 years. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, sounds like it's going to be a little bit more run and gun, up tempo. Should be fun to watch.
Should be looking forward to it.
Yeah. Let's get into some of the other coaching changes. And I think we got to start first with Calipari.
Yeah, this news this morning to me when I woke up at 6 a.m.
Yeah, so pretty awesome. He's leaving Kentucky to become the head coach at Arkansas. And, yeah, I was texting you about how I just love the fact that he had to change jobs because he lost to Greg Campy and our Oakland University Golden Grizzlies.
That's right.
Shout out once again to our Grizz.
I've been down to Lexington a few times for some family events, and they really do take basketball serious down there. There'll be old ladies who have educated opinions about the Wildcats. So everything you hear is true about the passion down there. And, you know, I heard a school teacher calling a 97-1 the day after the upset of Oakland. They said, "You just don't understand what you did to these people down here." You know, he was from up here, but he moved to Kentucky for work, and he was still listening to 97.1, you know, to stay in the loop with the hometown teams. And he said, "You have no idea the reaction that this has gotten down here. So it sounds like Campy chased them away.
Exactly. I also couldn't help but think about Ashley Judd. I know that she's a really big Kentucky fan, and she's been noticeably quiet, at least from what I can tell, during this whole time. I remember, like, when they've gone on runs in the past and stuff during the tournament, they always kept showing her and interviewing her and stuff. So,
oh yeah,
just wanted to bring that up.
Big Blue Nation's quiet right now, and now they're freaking out. They've got him gone, which a lot of them wanted, but now it's, are you going to get somebody better? So we'll find out for them. I heard Billy poach from the Bulls, but
yeah.
Will he want to go back to college and deal with all this nonsense with NIL and the portal?
No, man, no.
Yeah, I heard another rumor too. Your boy, Nate Oates. Probably wishful thinking. Like you said, he's already got, you know, a recent contract extension. They'd have to, you know, pay a significant amount of money to buy him out of that. So I don't know how realistic that is.
Yeah.
Probably wishful thinking.
And I guess it all depends. What is he looking for? You know, I think Nate Oates' background, he's from Indiana, and he moved up here to Romulus, Michigan, and was here for 11 years, I think, coaching at Romulus before he went to Buffalo. But to my knowledge, he doesn't have a Kentucky background. So would he want to take the pressure there? You know, obviously, Tuscaloosa is known for football, and the football coach is under a microscope, just like the basketball coaches at Kentucky. And, you know, I've kept in touch with a person or two from my time traveling down there as well. And they're loving basketball success right now. But much like U of M, it's second place to football. So, I mean, if he wants the spotlight, Nate Oates, then certainly go to Kentucky. But if he's content, you know, at a really good job, apparently, you know, he's been getting people there. You got the nice weather.
Yeah, a lot of support.
Play in the SEC and beautiful campus, then maybe he wants to stay. But I think you mentioned a buyout. I don't know what it is, but it's got to be a lot of money. I mean, they want to keep him. This is the first time they've had a basketball coach, and who the heck knows when.
Yeah, and I don't remember some of the other ones. Do you have any kind of news or information on that?
Nothing major. Obviously, the major one is Calipari. I think the big story locally will be, you know, how does Tom Izzo revamp his staff? Sadie Washington, who was an assistant to Campy, and I believe he was an assistant at OU years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he went to U of M under Beilein and Howard. He just interviewed for Izzo's staff.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I didn't hear that.
Not sure. Wow. What kind of contender he is for that. But I think, you know, Tom's promised some changes. We'll see if he's capable of doing that. He's very stuck in his ways, but he is a Hall of Famer. So I wouldn't ever put it past him. I thought he's got 100 lives. There are many times I thought they were done, and he's brought them back. So I think that's the main thing to keep on an eye locally. That now that Dusty May's in and settled down, well, hopefully not too subtle, because they got to get a roster. I think they only got 3 or 4 guys on the roster right now. Yeah. Interesting enough, Jawan's son is one who hasn't left. But we'll keep an eye on both Ann Arbor and East Lansing locally for sure.
Yeah. Musselman, he was one of the ones that changed places, right?
Yes. Didn't he go to, was it USC he went to? Or did he go leave from USC? I'm on the spot right now, so I don't.
Wait.
God bless Google. He is the one. He left Arkansas. He left Arkansas to go to USC.
I don't know why anybody would want to coach basketball at USC other than the weather. I mean, what have they ever done?
I think it's the weather, and they said that he's from the West Coast. So like his family and stuff, they wanted to go back. And I know he coached in the NBA for a little bit too on the West Coast. He was with the Golden State Warriors, Sacramento Kings. He coached at Arizona State for a little bit, actually not real long, just a couple of years. But yeah, I guess, you know, he's his family's there and stuff. So
I guess good luck. Maybe I'll make the tournament once or twice. Seems like that place you wouldn't want to go to coach basketball.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I guess the only other, if there aren't any other like real big name coaches or anything, those are the only ones that I could really think of. But I just feel like there's going to be more of like a trickle down. I guess I wanted to ask you, are there any others that you foresee? Like, are there any that you've heard or that you think could happen next?
I can't say I'm plugged in enough to know every, you know, potential opening out there. I mean, you're talking about the Blue Bloods. Bill Self's locked in at Kansas. I'm sure they're not happy with the last season, but I don't think he's in any danger. An interesting one to keep an eye on, not right now, but for the future, is John Shire at Duke. You know, he's been there 2 years now, filling in for Coach K. I believe he's only 36. He got him to the Elite Eight this year, so certainly not a failure. But apparently they got 5 5 stars coming in next year in the number one recruiting class. So it'll be interesting to see how he progresses at Duke over the next couple of years to see if he can win at the rate they're, you know, used to, and him keep his job. I'm sure he's heavily endorsed by Coach K. I mean, he certainly hasn't done anything to lose his job right now, but the standard there is Final Fours. It'll be interesting to see how the Louisville program attempts to resurrect itself. But I can't think of any big name coaches. Interesting enough, you had mentioned that this morning they asked Danny Hurley about the Kentucky job after the game, and he said, "No thanks," and I'm not the only person who's saying that either. I think that's seen as a hot ticker there that may not be as enticing now with NIL and the portal as well.
Exactly.
Let's give a shout to UConn. I mean, 6 Final Fours in the last 25 years or 26 years. I mean, they're the standard in college basketball if you just break it down to the last 25 years. I mean, and they put out big stars, and I'm not sure if you watched the entire game last night, but the first...
I did not, unfortunately.
The first, well, you didn't miss nothing in the second half.
Yeah, I saw. they dominated.
Yeah, it was the typical better athlete, better players, you know, finally rises to the top versus a good college team.
Experience, but, too.
Yes, experience, too. Moxie in the Final Four from last year. But they were the best team, and I can't see why somebody would want to leave UConn to go to Kentucky.
And shout out to Hurley. I mean, he took that program over. They were, you know, they had some rocky moments before he came in. They were kind of going the other direction there for a minute.
Well, they've won 3 natties. Well, they've won natties with 3 coaches. They had Calhoun and then Kevin Ollie. He won one before he got let go for whatever happened there. NCAA rules, which, you know, they can be iffy sometimes, but now they got Danny Hurley, and they've won 6 natties with 3 different coaches. So that just tells you something about what you can do at UConn. And
I forgot that they won the one with Kevin Ollie, but
I think it was they got hot at the right time, but they're not a historic power in the sense it's been 40 or 50 years. I know Calhoun put them on the map with Ray Allen, early 90s. But
don't forget about Rip Hamilton.
Yes, Rip Hamilton in the late.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Something about those something about UConn, you know, it breeds basketball now.
Yeah, no, that's a good call. And I guess otherwise
One name just to throw out there.
Yeah,
one name, and I don't know. It's a big name, but he's not at a basketball school. Bobby Hurley coaches at Arizona State and has had a bubble for years. And I don't think you can win at Arizona State either. So it's not like he's had a great job. But I'm always wondering when the axe is going to fall on him. And I'm also wondering, is he a decent coach that's just at a junk program too? I could see something happening where he gets let go. Maybe he comes and coaches with his brother for a year and gives it another crack elsewhere. Cause he got the job, I think, from coaching at Buffalo where he was successful. So maybe not this cycle. That's an eye to keep on at new places, but a couple years down the road, and a little surprised he's not been let go yet at Arizona State.
I'm wondering if there's any kind of possibility that he ever winds up at Duke?
Not with the lack of success right now, but I think that he could certainly wind up at Duke as an assistant if the circumstances led him there. And if he
it'd
ever
be went, a lot of pressure, and
it would. I think Shire's going to come through. If he can recruit like he has and get five stars, he should be all right there.
Yeah, I agree. And like you said, Coach K endorsed him, and it's not like he's done anything to deserve to be fired, but we do need to see, like you said, what they can do here in the next couple of years with all those recruits coming in. So just something to kind of keep an eye on. But I just always wondered like how cool / kind of weird it would be to have him go back and coach there and shoot, maybe bring Leitner with him.
I've thought about that too, but I don't think you could possibly bring him to coach Duke with nothing big on his resume.
Yeah. And then on top of it, like if it didn't work out, then it would just, tarnish their legacy that they had as players. And that we've seen enough of that around here already. So
we have Juwan Howard.
Yeah. One other thing I just wanted to ask you real quick before I forget to, before we break down, the rest of the brackets and stuff, I just wanted to get your take on Bronny James, what you thought of him this year, and just everything that he's doing as far as not only going out for the NBA draft, but entering the transfer portal as well. Just wanted to get your take on him.
I'm not sure it's fair to evaluate him. He had a heart attack. I'm no doctor, so I don't know how long it would take to, recover from that, get back up to your capabilities. At the same time, I think it's fair to say you'd like to see a little bit more from him. He obviously was in a dysfunctional situation at my favorite school, USC, which we just discussed. I think they were 15 and 18. So he probably wasn't in the best position to succeed. I heard he may go to Ohio State, which was down to his final two. LeBron's an Ohio State fan, so we'll see what happens there. As far as him going to the NBA, maybe it's smart for him to go to the NBA and use the leverage of his dad, because maybe he's just not that good. There's always the possibility he's just not that good. If he goes to, he could be in a Monty Bates situation. Monty went to Memphis as a freshman, flunked out of there, basically didn't do anything, and came to Eastern and lit the world on fire, but it didn't do him anything as far as getting up on the draft boards. So if Bronny goes and does anything less than wind up Big Ten Player of the Year, he's just going to be picked apart. So my prediction is he's going to end up going to the league and spending some time in the G League, and we'll see what kind of influence his father has in getting him up with the big club wherever he goes. I think the Lakers would probably be wise to waste a second round pick on him. I shouldn't say waste. I think wise and waste in the
utilize.
Same. Utilize a second round pick on him.
Yeah. I use that word a lot on this podcast. So
utilize. I can't
good
say
time that. To utilize the word utilize. See what I did
That's
there?
Right. So what
dude,
do you,
man, if this was PTI, you'd have like 1,000 points right now. I think I agree with everything that you just said. I think those were all excellent points. I totally agree. I think he's, just making a good business decision, keeping his options open. He's obviously listening to his dad and all of their people. He's going to get the best guidance that he can possibly get, and they'll make the best decision they can make.
I've heard the younger one who's 16 is better than him. So you
could
have
that too.
Potential situation where you got three Jameses on one team one day.
Then you got the one on Space Jam. Did you ever see that? Did you see the second Space Jam?
I can't sit here and say I have. Obviously, I've seen the first one. I'll have to check out the second one.
We actually, get this, man. We actually watched it with my parents. My mom rented it, and we all went over there and watched it. It was actually at their old house in Madison Heights. Shout out, Lanphier Rams.
That's right.
It was like right before they moved, I feel like. Good times
in the Heights, the MH.
Exactly. On that note, I'm going to completely turn it over to you here. Just your thoughts, anything that comes to mind regarding the tournament, our brackets, what you got?
Well, last night was the first time I ever had a bracket where I had the champion and finished in 26th place. So obviously on that bracket, I did something wrong in the earlier rounds. I had three brackets this year, including one in yours. And I was in first place for quite some time, but I had North Carolina winning, which I was surprised at how few people had them picked.
Yeah, it was just you and I think maybe like one other person.
Yeah. I was really pulling for Purdue last night just because I think it'd be good for the Big Ten. I think they're getting a bad rap for, you know, not winning it since Izzo last won it. I mean, it's certainly frustrating, but I mean, they're in it all the time. I mean, there's something to be said for that too, but obviously you want to win it. I think this year's tournament, they showed last night in the second half, they put up that it was the second largest margin of victory per game in the history of the tournament. So I think we've seen more competitive tournaments. To my surprise, I enjoyed the tournament without Michigan because of what Oakland did. I think that's one of the better upsets that we've had in the last who knows how long. Maybe not seeding-wise because we were a 4 and they were a 13, but Kentucky is college basketball. John Calipari's got a huge profile. The one and done's there, and to have a Division II transfer come off the bench and hit 10 threes. I say really them and UConn going back to back are the stories of the tournament. There really wasn't any other big breakout star performances that I'm concerned with, you know, that really come to my mind off the top of my head. So I think the Big Ten, you know, showed some strength with, you know, Purdue having their champion get that far. You know, MSU won a game, didn't make the second weekend, but they didn't have any embarrassing losses. Illinois ended up getting blown out, but I mean, they won a couple games. So I think it was a better tournament for the Big Ten than in recent years, I think. Unfortunately, didn't get the crown, though.
Yeah. I want to give NC State some more love, too. Both their men's and women's teams. Specifically the men, I watched them a lot. Obviously they beat our Grizz. And that was a great game overtime. The Grizz still weren't defending anybody. So that's the main reason why they lost, but
they couldn't stop him.
Nobody. No, they sure couldn't. And, Burns. And, I was calling him Montgomery Burns and,
excellent.
He, you know, just like you said, so big, you know, so dominant and just reminded me a lot of Zach Randolph, you know, just that ability to like that turnaround jumper. You know, and was he a lefty too?
He was.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure he gets that comp all the time. Yeah. And yeah, it was fun to watch. And you said it last night. You texted me and said, man, this has a 90s kind of vibe to it. And honestly, man, the whole tournament kind of felt like that. And I think it's very fitting that the year that you and I kind of reunite, come on this podcast here a few times and talk, now all of a sudden, you know.
The 90s big man is cool again.
Yeah, exactly.
At least in the college game.
I won't name his name, but you and I were joking about how our old coach was like probably cringing watching all of this. So I'll just leave that at that. But no. Yeah, I just wanted to bring them up one more time, too. I thought they had a really good run, really impressive. Obviously, after they beat the Grizz, you know, just everything that they did. And they fought hard. You know, I thought they played about as well as they could against Purdue. I liked the matchup with Burns and Big Fella, Edie. And, you know, I want to give him a shout out as well, because we did kind of bash him a little bit and for good reason, you know, when we had you on last time, you, me and Scott were talking about how, you know, he doesn't have a ton to his game. And I did laugh initially at the Yao Ming comparison, but after watching him specifically in this tournament, I do get a lot of Yao kind of vibes from him, you know, like he's got a real similar game with, you know, high post. he doesn't shoot the jumper as much, but like it's there, and they just they use him at that high post, and it opens things up. It just kind of gave me a lot of resemblance to, you know, those Houston Rocket teams from the early 2000s, and yeah, just brought back some cool memories. But yeah, having said all that, I still agree with everything that we talked about. I don't know how he's going to be able to translate to the NBA, where you're, you know, running up and down the floor and having to chase people around, and they switch everything defensively. And, you know, we even talked about him guarding some of these mobile centers like Chet Holmgren and people like that, who are basically like 7 foot guards, you know, or like the Phoenix Suns when they go small and play Kevin Durant at the five. Good luck with that.
I'd be interested to see if he could find a role as a bucket getter. You put him in for 5 minutes. See,
yeah,
how many
you said that before. And yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think Boban, you know, just put him out there when you, you know, when you're struggling, you need to get some easy shots. Just put him out there for a little stretch, let him do his thing, then bring him out. And yeah.
I'll tell you what, it looked so awkward last night with him and the big man from Connecticut going versus each other, because you just don't see that anymore. Two towers like that.
Yeah.
Like, it just didn't look right. But now what that we talk about it, you know, you go back to those 90s games, I'm sure that's what it looked like all the time.
It did. And credit to these guys, too. Like, they're good. You know, they deserve to be out there. It wasn't just because they're big. Like, they were actually doing stuff on both ends of the floor.
Right.
And they were mobile. You know, Edie had a ton of blocks, and a lot of that is timing. A lot of that is positioning and being in the right spot at the right time. And that's knowledge, too. So, I mean, definitely, you know, well justified for those guys to be out there and representing their teams and helping their teams win. And yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch. I thought this was a really good tournament. I really liked, you know, the brackets. I thought they were all strong. I know our bracket group that we're in, it did come down to the very end, which was awesome. My group last year, I think it was over before the Elite Eight. It was quite embarrassing. Like, all of our brackets busted. So a lot of upsets last year. This year, there were quite a bit. But, you know, at the very end, you know, we had two number one seeds going at it. So, yeah, it was fun.
Being an NBA guy primarily for you, what is your opinion of Dalton Knecht? I'm sure you had a chance to check him out and play. He's one heck of a college basketball player. You think his game translates?
I don't know, man. I think it can. I think it can, but I don't know that it will. And I mean, we've said that about a lot of guys. I mean, heck, your boy Tyler Hansbrough,
Psycho T. Yeah.
Yeah. And guys, you know, like I think of guys like Frank Kaminsky, you know, and who was the other guy from Wisconsin that was on that team too? His name's escaping me right now. But yeah, you know who I'm talking about. That guy. Sam, damn it. What's his last name? Fuck. I can't think of it right now. Anyways, you know who I'm talking about.
I do.
Yeah, so those guys, you know, we've seen a lot of others, you know, just really good, successful collegiate careers that just, you know, you get to the pros and for whatever reason. And a lot of it, too, comes down to where you end up. You know, if you get drafted on a team that has a bunch of guys in front of you, you're just not going to see the court time. And then by the time you move on and go somewhere else, you know, you've already brought in 2 or 3 years worth of other rookies and young players that these other teams are looking at, and you just kind of get lost in the shuffle. So it's tough. It's not easy. But I definitely think he has a chance. And like, in our previous segment here on this week's episode, I talked about Luke Garza. You know, he's a guy that was, you know, really good in college, and he's had some good moments in the NBA, but I just don't know that he's going to be able to find a team that says like, hey, here's a consistent role for you. Even if it's off the bench, here's, you know, 15, 20 minutes a game. You know, you really have to get lucky in finding the right opportunity, the right situation, the right coaching staff, who's going to be committed and dedicated to you being a part of that team and a part of that rotation. So
I find NBA careers, you know, of college stars to be interesting. And I'm just going to use some examples from Michigan, from Beilein. He put a lot of guys in the pros, and not a ton of them have done great things. But you look at Mo Wagner, you know, there's been years he's averaged 11 points a game. So if I hear up the bat that somebody averages 11 points a game and is a big man, you think, well, he's got to be doing well. But then you find out, well, he got benched or dumped down to the G League for some reason. Trey Burke is a guy who goes down as a bust, and I guess as a lottery pick he is. But there's been spurts in the NBA where he's scoring 30 points a night, and then he'll get benched later that season. So it just
That's a great call. And he's a guy that I think probably could still be playing in the NBA. Trey Burke. I remember how badly we all wanted the Pistons to take him, and it just never happened. Not only did they not take him, but like he did wind up, like you said, kind of bouncing around, being a bit of a journeyman, and you know, just never found his way. And yeah, I mean, we could go on and on. There's all kinds of guys who were so good in college. Remember Rashad Phillips?
I do. Yeah, I haven't heard
that guy. He was the next Allen Iverson.
Yep, I remember that.
Looked like him, played just like him, and yeah, just it never worked out.
But did it though? I mean, if you're that guy, if you're Trey Burke and you look in the mirror when you're 50 years old, are you a success? Or are you a bust? I mean, you made the league. We played over 10 years, probably. You put up multiple big scoring nights. I think he has a double-figure scoring average. You know, in the eyes of the fan, most of them will say he's a bust. But are you a bust? I mean,
he ain't no bust. He played in the NBA long enough to go and look at the money that he made.
Yeah,
his bank account will tell you that he's anything but a bust.
More than any other sport, can you put up numbers and be considered a bust than the NBA? I was reading about Chauncey the other day. He averaged 11 points a game and was considered a bust. I mean, 11 points a game in the NBA is nothing to sniff at, but you're labeled.
No, and that was with getting traded and yanked around rotation after rotation. So, yeah, no, you're right. It's tough. And, you know, the NBA is tough. You know, it's 30 teams, but – you know, each team only goes, what, like 9 or 10 players deep in a rotation. So even if you are putting up stats, you know, per game, you know, you still might have, like I said, you know, one or two guys in front of you. And then, you know, your opportunities shrink even more. So, yeah, man, it's tough. But, yeah, no, if I'm any of those guys, you know, I wouldn't think of myself as a bust. You know, it just maybe, again, the circumstances and situations could have been a little bit different and better, but you know, everything kind of happens for a reason. You know, we all live once, and you know, like we've said before, you just make the most of it. And you know, kind of like we talked about the first time you came on this podcast, we talked all about you and I and our own personal experiences playing together. And just, you know, there was a lot of negative stuff that, you know, you and I could both go back and harp on, but you know, that's not what we do. We focus on the positive. We focus on the things that we look back fondly on, and that's what keeps us, you know, going and keeps us strong, and you know, keeps our friendship going. And I'm incredibly thankful for that, and obviously incredibly thankful to have you on our podcast again today. this has been awesome.
It's been fun every time I've been on. I look forward to coming on the next time.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you wanted to add here? I think that's pretty much it for me.
Just would like your take. If the Pistons end up holding on to Monty and Troy, where do they go from here? I'm asking because I don't know. I really don't know. I think you got to look at trading Ivy as much as I like him. You got to shake that up somehow. But I just it pains me to think about trading him.
Well, I'd rather see them trade him than let him just leave for nothing like they did Killian Hayes. But coincidentally enough, I work with a guy named Mike who I was just talking to about this today. And he asked me the same thing. And I said, honestly, man, I got nothing. It sucks because, you know, I'm a diehard Pistons guy. And I've always, you know, I really up until this season, everything that Troy Weaver has done I've co-signed on. And quite frankly, if I was general manager of that team, I would have done the exact same thing. I would have tore the team down and I would have rebuilt it completely around rookies, young players, and just kind of like flyer guys, you know, like former lottery picks. Just take flyers on these guys, put them on a different team with a different coaching staff, and let's just see what they got, you know. And again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago with some of these college guys that just don't quite translate over. But if you got a shitty team like the Pistons, you just take a flyer on those guys because they are still young. They're cheap in terms of, you know, their contracts. You know, you're not paying veteran salaries and stuff. You're just getting these guys, you know, on rookie type of contracts. Why not just pick them up, throw them out there and see what they look like? And then if, you know, if they don't really amount to anything, you just cut them loose, let them go, whatever. But, and that's what they've done up until this year. And then this summer, this past summer, I should say, when they hired Monty Williams, Scott and I were just so excited and, you know, fired up about that. And it just couldn't have gone any worse. I mean, they're going to finish with less wins than the Detroit Lions this year, probably. And
can you believe that? I mean,
no, right, I truly cannot believe it.
Considering, and that's a compliment to the Lions, but with
yes, pass, yes, but it's a compliment to the Lions and a gigantic insult to the Pistons, and rightfully so, because it just, it's been so bad. And the only thing I can say is sell the team. Tom Gores. I mean, I just don't have any trust in his judgment at this point in terms of basketball. And we, Scott and I, have talked all about this. He comes in all the time and talks about what he's done for the community. And I don't disagree. I think that's awesome. You know, great. You move the team back downtown. You know, it's a city game. That's cool. You got the practice facility. That's great. They've done all this stuff for different organizations and charities and stuff. That's really cool. The stuff that they've done for like Detroit public schools and everything, that's fantastic. But the product on the floor at the end of the day has gone from bad to worse. And that's an understatement. And yeah, I cannot support anything that he's done up until now. And I just can't trust him to make the right call on anything basketball related. And so for anybody that says, fire Troy Weaver, fire Monty Williams, okay, that's easy. And sure, go ahead. But who are you going to hire next? And who is Tom Gores going to hire that we're going to go, all right, here we go. This is the right move now. We're gonna turn things around right here. I don't know.
Gores showed me he was clueless when he tried to get Blake Griffin and build a big three with him, Drummond, yeah, and Jackson. God. I mean, I respect Blake Griffin. I became a fan of his when he was here that one year.
Yeah,
he,
and it's no, yeah, I completely agree. I was going to say that. No knock on Blake Griffin. I mean, he came here and embraced it. Like, I thought, I was worried he was going to get here and just completely sulk. And he embraced it. I mean, he made Detroit his own and did the best he could. He actually statistically, his first year with us was really good. And, you know, individually, he did everything that he could. That team just wasn't built to compete. And bringing in a contract like that, that's exactly what I'm saying. So like with Troy Weaver, he did the complete opposite of that. He said, we're not bringing in any Blake Griffins or any of these max contract guys that we're going to say, please save us. Please be our savior. That's not going to work. You've got to just cut it down completely and just bring in a bunch of young talent and hope that a few of them hit. And unfortunately with the Pistons, none of them have really hit other than maybe Jalen Duren. You know, we've talked about Cade Cunningham. He's looked good when he's been healthy, but it's obviously not good enough. And like you said, the fit between him and Ivy, I just don't see that long term. And obviously short term, it hasn't looked too good either. So whoever is running the team, whether it's still Weaver or if it's going to be somebody else, you've got to think they're at least going to probably break up that backcourt. And then obviously we got to see what pick they get in the lottery this year, but either way, you know, you and I talked about it with Scott before, there isn't like a clear cut guy in this draft who's going to be that, like, you know, again, savior or anything like that. I think it's going to be somebody that's going to just have to fit in with some of these other guys that we have right now. And, you know, Ausar Thompson of the Thompson Twins.
Whoa.
You know, we've talked all about him on this podcast. We love him. You know, but he's got a lot of health stuff going on right now. We talked about how he had to end his season early with a blood clot. We don't know what's going to happen with that. And just some of these other guys, you know, Isaiah Stewart, what are they doing with him? They extended him. Are they going to keep him? I don't really think he has a ton of upside at this point. I think he kind of is who he is. And as far as coaches go, I mean, first of all, if you want to fire Monty Williams, you're going to have to buy him out. And I don't think he wants to do a buyout. And I don't think that any other coach is going to be really excited to come here at this point. If they fired Monty Williams, they'd probably just have to hire some really young guy, you know, maybe out of college or, you know, an assistant coach or something like that, which they reportedly were going to do before Monty became available last year. So I don't know, man. It's a really good question. I wish I had a better answer for you, but it's something that we're going to come back to here during the off season. And, you know, maybe I'll try to get you on for some of that too.
Sounds great. Yeah, I co-signed on everything Weaver did too, so I'm not sitting here all angry with him. I'm just baffled that the team is as bad as it is. And I guess at the end of the day, you got to go to Tom Gores. I mean, it starts at the top. The Lions finally got the right Ford running the team after multiple Fords failing with it. So it obviously starts from the top, and the guy knows nothing about basketball.
Yeah, and we've talked about, too, just how he's not really here. You know, he's based out of L.A. That's where he lives. And he only makes it to, like, a couple games a year. And, you know, I just think at the end of the day, like, as an owner, you have to connect a little bit more than that with your fans. You know, for as much as he hypes up his work with the community and stuff, he's not here. He's not present. And that's a thing. You know, I don't think it's the thing that has to do, like, the problem with this franchise. But I do think it's a problem. I think it's something that, you know, if he wants to change things around here, I think that's something that he needs to work on changing, you know, is just making his own presence felt a lot more in this community, or sell it to somebody else who's going to do that. And I know that's easier said than done, you know. Not a lot of people sitting around with, you know, $3 or $4 billion, but. Yeah, I don't know. I don't trust Tom Gores at this point, and I'm rooting for him. You know, I don't expect him to leave. I think he's going to stay our owner, and I do think he's going to stick with Troy Weaver and with Monty Williams, and I hope that they can turn things around and get better, but I really do not have any kind of, like, they need to do this, they need to do that. You know, I'm kind of out of, out of ideas and out of options at this point, just kind of sitting back and keeping my fingers crossed. But I will say, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, at no point am I going to reach out to a single free agent and say, here's a max contract, please dig us out of this. I don't think that's going to work. I think as soon as you do that, you're bringing in the next Blake Griffin. You're bringing in another guy that's going to do whatever he can do, but it's not going to be enough. It's going to get us to, like, maybe the play-in or, like, first round of the playoffs. You're just going to lose and have nothing to show for it. You won't even have a lottery pick in the draft at that point. And your cap's going to be screwed because now you're paying somebody the max. You're not going to have any flexibility. At least with Troy Weaver, he's maintained that flexibility with all these young guys, you know, just these movable contracts, and he's made a shit ton of trades. So it's not like he's sat around and just said, you know, hey, I came in the first year, I tore the thing down, brought in guys, we're going to stick with them. He's made move after move after move after move each and every year. So he's trying. I mean, they're definitely trying. It's tough, man. It's tough. We're going to have to see what they do here this summer and see what pick they get. And yeah, just hope they can turn things around.
Next year they win 28 in a row. I'm Kyle, you heard it here first.
Hey, I mean,
the turnaround.
I hope. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. All right. I think that's going to do it for this show.
Time to go, Maryland.
All right. Thanks again for having me on.
Yeah. We'll be back again next week for episode 44. Thank you for listening to Menace Podman. Find new episodes every week wherever you stream your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you find audio podcasts. Please leave us a rate and review. We greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks again, Mike.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Steve from Menace Podman. Scott and I have been having a blast creating our podcast. I can't tell you how much we look forward to recording days and providing amazing NBA content to our listeners every week. It's hard work, but with the right software, it's a lot easier. We use Podcastle to seamlessly edit and create production quality sounding podcasts. Podcastle is now equipped to record audio and video and distribute to all the places podcasts are found. You can find a link directly in the show notes to Podcastle. So, if you're a podcaster or future podcaster, go check out Podcastle. Menace Podman.